sound white, boy. Hello, everyone, and welcome into Debate Night. I'm Hunter, joined, as always, by Brody and Silas in the booth. Brody's back in Dallas, I believe, back in Texas.
Thank goodness.
The West Coast swing's officially over, right? You're going Midwest next.
We're done. Yeah. I need a fresh slate, man. I need something fresh.
Recap your
West Coast, I got crushed.
Yeah, I was going to say, give us like a, we'll obviously get into Beaver State Fling a little bit, but now you get the West Coast was like, what, four or five events on the West Coast swing?
Four events.
Give us a bird's eye view of like just general what went good, what went bad on that, the four event swing out there.
For me, like personally?
For you personally.
Oh, man. I mean, the list for the stuff that went good is really small, but I mean, I would say like my distance feels to be completely back from, because I feel like Lyme disease last year, I wasn't nearly throwing as far. And I think even at the beginning of this season, I still wasn't 100% back to throwing as far. I think my distance is finally back. I mean, I play practice rounds with Ezra, who the probably top 10 guys distance wise on tour, and you know, I've played rounds with Kevin Jones, Calvin, Ricky, AB, guys that throw far. So I feel like my distance is back. And then if you actually do go on like UDisc and look at like the statistics, my tee to green and my circle one percentage has been really good. So I'm throwing the disc really well. I'm very happy with how I've been throwing the disc. Still, obviously, would like to give myself more chances and more putts. But my short game really was, you know, at the end of the day, my short game was kind of my downfall for the last couple of events. Beaver State Fling, I was 15th with strokes gained tee to green. And I was 12th and parked. And I was six, meaning five people beat me in circle one in regulation. So like I'm giving myself plenty of chances. It's, you know, it's like what we talked about before. There's just so many with the field being as good as it was. I mean, let me see if I can look this up real quick. I feel like just a couple swings here and there would have drastically changed your position. Which, you know, when you start going down, right? When you're like, when you finish in like 80th place, sometimes if you shoot three or four shots better in the tournament, you might only go up to like 70th or 65th.
Yeah.
But right now, like these tournaments are so top, like packed at the top. You know, I finished at 12 under, and that was four shots out of a top 10.
So
it's like
a little over one stroke around.
Yeah. And you think about, and then I go back and I think, okay, like I missed a 15 footer. That's one stroke.
Yep.
and then there was probably five or six times where I had like 175 feet or more in, or sorry, or less in, where a lot of people are probably jump putting and I didn't get up and down like five times. And it's not like, oh, well, you got a tree in your way and you got to hit a gap. No, I'm talking about you have a basket in the middle of the field. I'm 175 feet away and I'm not getting up and down.
What's going wrong?
I don't know. You don't have a consistent miss? No. It's not even so much that. It's like, I don't know if it's a lack of focus or going through my pre-shot routine or not giving every shot like the required attention that I need to. But it's, you know, when you're 175 out, you should be getting that inside of 15 feet every time.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of times I don't know what it was. It was frustrating, I tell you that much, but that was like Beaver State Fling is, you know, obviously the weather and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It was kind of wild and crazy. But when you start looking at it, you know, I'm not happy with a 32nd finish. I'm very unhappy about it. But when you start looking at the scores and go, man, you were only four shots out of a top 10, like a top 10, I would have felt pretty good.
Yeah.
And it's like, were there four shots that you could have easily gotten? And it's like, the answer is yes. So now it's like, how do I make sure in the future I don't give up those strokes? Because when it's easy to go back and be like, well, if I don't throw an OB on this hole, if I don't miss the Mando on this hole, or if I make this, you know, I'm not even talking about my final round that I had like five putts inside of 40 feet and I missed every single one. Like, I'm not even talking about those steppers that in my mind I should make more than half.
Yeah.
I'm talking about simple, like, I have a get freaky zone in my hand. I have a disc or a basket 170 feet away and I just need to get up and down.
Yeah.
And I was not able to do it. Like, those are shots where it's like, you can't be messing that up if you want to be at that high level. So that's kind of how I feel about the West Coast, is just making dumb mistakes and not capitalizing on opportunities. So it was definitely a frustrating four tournament. I can tell you that much.
Yeah. And I mean, I got to ask at least this, because when I asked you summarize the West Coast, you initially thought I was talking about from like the Pro Tour standpoint. Was that because you had certain thoughts on the West Coast swing as a whole?
Well, yeah, I mean, I didn't know if you were, I think it was very interesting because you had two very similar back-to-back tournaments with a week in between. So you had like the OTB and then you had Masters Cup.
Yeah.
OTB might have been one of the most well-run tournaments of the year so far. You know, with the bleachers, with the spectator, like, breaking up with the driving in and seeing where the spectators park, and they have like fencing leading you from the parking lot to the actual site. Like, OTB felt like the most professional event we played at. And it was interesting too, listening to some of, I was listening to a podcast today where they were talking about, you know, hey, what the US Open's about to happen right now for golf.
Yeah.
And they were talking to one of the guys and they were just like saying like, you know, does it still feel like a major? Like, you know, he's been on tour for a couple of years now. Do you still get nervous and yada, yada? And it was interesting because one of the things that he said that makes like majors stand out is like the bleacher seating and stuff. He like said how like one of his favorite holes was, I think it was like 16 or something, because there was just so many bleachers and stuff going in. And that's totally true. When I think about the Open that I went to out in Ireland, they bring in these huge bleachers, almost kind of like Waste Management style, like that they have on 16.
Yeah.
They bring that in for like so many holes. And that's like not your typical PGA Tour thing. Like, PGA Tour, they'll have some bleachers here and there. They'll have some suites. But for the majors, outside of obviously the Masters, because the Masters is kind of the same, but like the USGA apparently just comes in and like transforms the course. And I thought that was interesting because I think whenever we talk about like, okay, well, what can disc golf do to make majors like feel more special and stuff? I think that could be an answer, is trying to bring in more bleachers, trying to bring in more like stadium seating, trying to bring in more stuff to where it just doesn't feel like another disc golf Pro Tour event.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think OTB did an incredible job. I think Portland Open did an incredible job. And then the two Silver Series, obviously being Silver Series, they did feel like they just didn't have as much resources as the other two. So they didn't feel as big. But as far as crowds go, man, the West Coast definitely brought it. California, they all came out. Pacific Northwest and Portland, they all came out. I mean, the fact that there were people watching in the weather that we were playing in at Beaver State Fling, I mean, it was nuts to see how many people were out there, even though the weather was miserable.
Yeah. That's crazy. That's wild.
Silas, I've got a special guest. Can we patch him in? It's a disc golf blog on Twitter.
How are we going to patch him in?
Yeah, we can get him in the Discord.
I'm joking. Oh, he's not coming on.
Dang it. I got excited.
See,
I was like, we got a chance here. We got an actual debate night.
Someone did ask if he was going to come on, and I responded saying, no way he does. And this was his response. I asked you if Trump did anything wrong on January 6th. You responded, I have no idea. You lack intellectual honesty. you ban people for saying Black Lives Matter, and you defend drunken hecklers. So nope, I don't wish to join you at your haunted house.
I mean, that guy lives in a fantasy world, I think, at this point. I mean, pretty much everything he just listed is just not even true.
Yeah, so to respond, I have no, my response of I have no idea is I don't know what happened on January 6th with Trump.
Like,
I
literally have
no idea. No, this January 6th?
No, that the trial is going on for that right now. That's what he's referencing.
Oh, he asked if Trump did anything wrong on January 6th.
He's referencing back to that.
I think he initially, that's not what he asked, though. He initially asked what my thoughts were on the, he asked, like, did you see the trial or something like that?
Yeah.
And what my thoughts were. And I was like, I have no idea. I'm not paying attention to that. The Black thing, we've already talked about this many times, but for those that don't know, I think it is easy to kind of throw us under the bus and say, like, that foundation banned someone on our, it was first off on Discord, which is like a private server. We have it very public, and we want as many people that love disc golf to join the foundation disc golf server. And if you haven't yet, check out the link down below. But we have a set of rules, and they're very, very simple set of rules of what can and can't happen. And we've definitely, I feel like over time too, we've done a good job of changing and kind of going with, you know, okay, this is happening. Our rules don't really allow that, but maybe should they? And I feel like we have done a good job of changing the rules with how the times have been changing. But the Black Lives Matter thing was simply someone just came in and started spamming Black Lives Matter and didn't want to have a discussion or anything like that. And it had nothing to do with what he was saying. It was simply the fact that he was just spamming and just constantly saying it. And he was warned and kept doing it and then got banned. I'm pretty sure that's what happened.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was prior to this situation actually led us to have like a 3-warning system, but he was messaged and said like, hey, calm down, you know, stop spamming, not stop saying Black Lives Matter, stop spamming, then put into timeout for a little bit, and then came back, continued, and then banned. And yeah, obviously people tried to cancel us over that. It wasn't even our decision. We got a message like a day later, because like I started seeing stuff on Twitter.
Yeah,
and I was like, what the heck's going on? Like, what happened on our Discord server? And then I had all the whole moderating team explain it all to me. I was like, okay, so it's just someone was trying to get us essentially. But I mean, from that situation, because we also had a separate rule that wasn't in place with this, but some people had issues with it of like no political talk, period, on the entire Discord, because
that's initially what we had, yeah.
Yeah, because we want it to be a place that you can just come and talk disc golf, because we're all disc golfers. Like, who cares about politics? Let's talk disc golf. That's what the Discord's for. And some people were upset about that because they thought we were silencing them and all this stuff when we just, no politics, period, was the rule. So we created the current event tab so that if you want to talk politics and talk back and forth, you just go in there. We created a channel for that. So, like, a lot of, you know, like you were saying, changes and adjustments came from that, but I mean, it just is going to keep getting thrown in our face without any context over and over and over and over. But it is what it is. The people who are there and the people who pay attention understand the context behind it and what actually happened. And the people who want to hate us, they're going to find a way to hate us, even if it's going back 3+ years to find a random tweet and quote tweeting it.
And I have no idea what he means by drunken hecklers. I feel
that
like
was the
anything,
Ella Hansen.
Drunken hecklers.
It was the Ella Hansen tweet is what he's referencing.
Okay, that's, yeah, I mean, what the heck? You paid money to come to an event. You should be allowed to cheer and root and do whatever you want, essentially, in the rules of spectating. Obviously, now, if you start doing stuff and you start distracting players or you start taking away from the event because you are doing it while players are actually playing, then that's something that can be addressed. But yeah.
Well, it's
like
we talked about it last week where you were saying you love it when crowds are rowdy and like after it comes out of your hand, people yelling, or, you know, if people, I mean, the direct situation was someone was yelling, throw a forehand, because they wanted to see someone throw a forehand or something similar to that prior to any throw happening or anything like that. And basically all you had said was like, they're a fan. Like, I mean, if I'm at a NBA game, the finals are going on right now. You think I'm not going to yell every time Steph touches the ball, shoot a three? Like, Yeah, I'm not telling him to shoot a three. I'm just saying, like, I want to see you shoot a three. Shoot it.
I had a bunch of people this past, I mean, literally the past couple of tournaments yell at me, throw a scuba.
Yeah.
And like, I either just, they're too far away. So I either like just ignore it and keep walking. Or if they say something and I'm like kind of close to them, I'll just like be like, definitely not a scuba. Like, definitely not throwing a scuba from 350 feet away.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. I think I came on, I don't know if you saw, I went on Twitter live for a little bit. And because a bunch of people, I don't even know what people were talking about. I can't even remember what it was. But it was something that I think this Twitter account brought up. And so a bunch of other people obviously, you know, started talking and whatnot. And it just baffles me whenever someone wants to make the claim that I'm literally trying to get them to come on this podcast for like monetary reasons. Like, these podcasts don't really make us that much money.
Yeah.
And I hate to break it to you, but like, having a random Twitter account that no one knows really come on this podcast probably isn't going to like blow up. The reason why I'm inviting you on the podcast is simply because it sounds like you do want to have a discussion. And if you do want to have a discussion, what better way of doing it than face-to-face, well, on Zoom or Discord or however it may be, than on Twitter. Like, Twitter's so hard to have a back and forth conversation. And to me, it just blows my mind whenever someone takes that like excuse of like, I'm not coming on your gosh darn podcast and giving you views. It's like, if you really disagreed with someone, like if you really hated Skip Bayless, right? Yeah. Tons of people hate Skip Bayless. If now obviously Skip Bayless is on a whole different spectrum than where we are.
Yeah.
But if you hate Skip Bayless and you tweet him something and he's like, hey, we'll Skype you in. Come on our show tomorrow. Like, are you saying like, no, man, debate me here like a man? No, you are 100% taking him up on that.
I mean,
the
only way I'm saying no is if I know I'm about to get roasted and lose in front of the whole audience on ESPN or whatever. I don't even know Skip Bayless what his show is anymore. I'm not going on there because I feel like whatever, I'm about to get wrecked.
Half the people that listen to this podcast disagree with most of the stuff that I even say. So
that's
it's not even like we have like a, yeah, we don't have like a bunch of people just in the chat being like, yeah, whatever Brody says. Yeah, sure. 100%. No, our chat, I mean, Silas, you watch our chat all the time. When I start going on rants and start going off, people in the chat all the time call me out. So it's not like we have like this, you know, you're coming into the den, the lion's den, you're going to get roasted. But like, if you are coming on and you do have like stupid stuff to say that I find is like, I don't believe or I don't whatever, and I'm inviting you on to the podcast, like, I don't know how you don't take up on that.
I mean, I agree. We'll see if it ever happens in the future. My money's on no.
I don't think it'll ever happen.
No,
it's too many chances.
That'd be electric, though.
It would be.
I mean, I'm always so curious. Like, to me, like, I'm just so curious as some of the stuff that I'm so adamant on and so passionate about. I'm just so curious how someone else's brain thinks differently. And so I'm not even in the spectrum of like, I'm 100% right and you're 100% wrong. It's more like, I'm curious to just hear your point of view to like, try to come to the same conclusion of like, how did you get to where you're thinking? And unfortunately, when you don't have conversations, you know, over voice, over talking, and you just have them via Twitter, it's very difficult sometimes to even understand what someone's point is.
Yeah. No, 100%. I do got to ask you to take completely different 180 turn. So you're back in Dallas. I was more curious myself because I've been to Dallas a few times now, played some courses. When you come back in town, what's like the first course you want to go play? Like, is it always like, I just got to get Dash's track game real quick? Or is there like a different course?
No. Like today, I mean, I think it's really weather dependent. So like today it was extremely windy. So I went to Old Man, which was, it is on the lake and there's a couple holes that are pretty ridiculous to play when it's windy, but like the other half of the course is in the woods and kind of protected. So it's very, weather dependent. I normally text the Easy Three group and you know, ask like, hey, how has the weather been? Like, has it rained? Because if it's rained, then that pretty much knocks out 95% of the courses in the area, has just being unplayable. But I like to bounce around. We're gonna be playing Greenbelt Golds, which is probably the most closest to like a USDGC or a preserve that we're about to go play. It's a very long course, very demanding off the tee, landing zones. And so this week I'm gonna be probably playing that most of the week to get prepared for the preserve.
So you have a preserve, you'll be heading out early next week, right?
Yeah, my schedule is kind of nuts next week. I'm flying up to Minneapolis to go to the preserve. We're going to film the practice round and film the doubles battle. We do have confirmation that Double G is going to be in this week's doubles battle, and him, you know, obviously being on the hot streak that he's on, plus at preserve, which is a course I think really suits his game. It should be very fun. Initially, the idea is to have David Wiggins as his partner. We're not sure if he's going to be at the event or not, so stay tuned for that. But it should be a good doubles battle. And then I'm going to be flying to Evansville, Indiana.
Oh, for AmWorlds.
AmWorlds. I'm doing some stuff with Discraft there. And then I'm going to be flying back to Minneapolis, get like one more day of practice or like one more round of practice in, and then we got the preserve.
So dang.
It'll be a little bit of a busy week for me next week, but this week is more chill, hanging out with the boys, hanging out with Kelsey, and getting some practice in down here in the warm, warm weather.
Nice. Because what's going on this weekend is the match play event out in Colorado,
I got an invitation to.
Really?
That just should show you something.
Now that's okay.
Like far down they had to go.
Wow. My question was going to be, because obviously we've seen Calvin Heimberg has now announced he's most likely out. So I'm assuming he's going to be officially out. That adds him to a list of Ricky Wysocki, Chris Dickerson, Paul McBeth, Drew Gibson, Matty O, Emerson Keith, Chris Clemens, Corey Ellis, Thomas Gilbert, Casey White, now Brody Smith, who have been qualified and rejected their invitations, which leads you to a question. Well,
Say Simon? Simon's in there too.
Simon,
right?
No, Simon's going on this list.
Oh, Simon
unless he has since Discmania sponsors it, I would imagine. You know, they probably want him out there.
Okay.
Yeah, he's there. I mean, there's still a decent field when all things are considered. Like Gannon Burr is still going to be there. Aaron Gossage, Anthony Barella, Simon Lazat, Mason Ford, Nico, Joel Freeman, Kevin Jones. There's still going to be plenty of people to make it entertaining. So
yeah,
it's still going to be a worthwhile watch as fans. But as a player who has rejected now that I know that, what's your reasoning? And have you heard other players' reasonings for why are so many people not going to this thing?
Yeah, I mean, my reasoning is pretty simple. Like Jeff Spring reached out to me a couple days ago, maybe 2 days ago. It was either Sunday, I think it might have been Sunday night, letting me know, hey, just, you know, if someone else drops, you're the next man up. Just wanted to let you know, yada, yada. So for me dropping out, I mean, it was definitely more of a timing situation of where I was already flying back home with to Dallas, and I was already planning on doing, you know, we still have boxes out here. We still haven't completely moved in yet.
Yeah.
So there's still like a lot of stuff I need to kind of do around the house. But also the decision also kind of got a little easier for me is because I actually got pretty sick yesterday. And I don't know if that was I think it was a mixture of the weather we were playing in, because it literally went from beautiful weather, like 80 degrees, 75 degrees to like 50s, 40s, and rainy. And so I don't know if that drop in weather kind of got me like a bad cold, but I was feeling really, really bad yesterday. So it kind of made it like pretty easy for me to be like, hey, I don't know if I'm even going to feel good enough to do this. But for me, like timing just didn't really make sense. With the other pros, I think it's a tough ask. when you have everyone in Portland right now and they have to make their way over to Preserve to then stop along the way in Colorado. I think the location also, with it being at altitude, I think some people just didn't want to have to relearn how to throw discs, because you know, your discs are going to fly completely different in Colorado than they do elsewhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we've got a pretty big stretch coming up with tournaments. So yeah, I mean, I'm not super surprised with the decision for a lot of the pros not wanting to go to this event.
Yeah, I mean, from the list, so Calvin Heinberg, when he tweeted, it seems like he's sick or injured or something's going on. He said his body doesn't need the rest, is essentially what he had, or not tweeted. I saw it on Twitter. He put it on Instagram. Ricky, obviously, he's still coming back from his knee injury. So he's missed pro tours up to this point. He's coming back at the Preserve. So kind of injury to a certain extent. Chris Dickerson, he's not coming back till Idlewild. So again, makes sense for him. Paul, I'm pretty sure that he's at a Paul Macbeth Foundation trip out of the country this week. So there's that. Beyond him, the Drew, Matteo, Emerson Keith, Chris Clemens, Corey Ellis, Thomas Gilbert, Casey White, those players, I mean, I have no idea. It just seems like a very large list.
I think it's just a traveling thing.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone, you know, we just got done with a long stretch over in the West Coast, right? We basically were 5 weeks straight. There was 1 week off, but most people that, you know, have RVs or have vans, they stayed out West. So they were just out West for 5 weeks. Now they have an off week to get over to Preserve. If you take away that off week, they now are driving to Colorado and doing all of the Colorado. And then literally right when Colorado ends on Sunday, they're doing a full day to get to the Preserve, where I think a lot of people are just like, listen, I want to take my time. I don't want to have to drive a crazy amount of hours in the day.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to get over to Minneapolis whenever I get over there and start practicing. I think that's in the back of the mind of a lot of people, is like, it would be tough to travel, get to Colorado, finish that event, and then go straight to Minneapolis afterwards.
Yeah. I would be interested to see what the attendance would have been if this was at, say, I think someone tweeted at me, and I think Blue Ribbon Pines, if that's the right name of the course, I'm pretty sure that's somewhat close to the Preserve, or at least
the Majestic.
Yeah, so it's at least in Minnesota, but somewhere like that, where it's like more in the vicinity, to where instead of the ask being you have to go somewhere in between and then go to Minnesota, if it's like go to Minnesota and you're just gonna have to get there a little faster, I would be interested to see how many players that swayed. Because, I mean, on the FBO side, we have Kristen, Paige, and Kat not showing up either, which Kristen's obviously in Europe, Paige and Kat not fully sure there, but you know, when you combine the MPO and FPO, you're missing basically the top five, because Eagle's obviously not listed, but he's not going to be there. You're missing the top five MPO and the top three FPO players at this event.
Well,
lowers the quality.
Well, here's the question too, is like, why play this event?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we talked about in Griplocked a little bit. Is like
what's the reasoning to want to play in this event?
It would have to be money to a certain extent.
That's the only thing I can think of, is the winner takes home 10K or whatever it may
is
be.
Have they announced what it is this year? We couldn't really find it. I know last year the winner took home 10K. And I know that last year pretty much everyone that showed up took home money, but
yeah, I'm assuming it's probably very similar to that, if not more. But like outside of like the money, like what is the reason to play this event? And if you look at it, all the people that are saying no, those are all people that don't need the 10K.
For the most part, yeah. Yeah.
Right. So I think that's the tricky thing, is you have an event that there's not really any prestige behind. There's not any like, hey, I just won this match play. It doesn't go on your record. It's very much like the All-Star kind of event.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it's tricky, is, you know, players know how important these Elite Series events are. I mean, you're also starting to see like way more people play these Silver Series events than they did last year. Like the Silver Series fields this year have been very, very impressive. And so, yeah, I mean, I think people are putting their time and effort and you know, thoughts all towards trying to get more Disc Golf Pro Tour points, because more than ever, I mean, if you go down the people, have you guys done that on Grip Locks? Have you guys looked at like who's right now not qualified for the Tour Championship?
For the Tour Championship, we did it like 2 weeks ago, two or three, maybe it's 3 weeks ago now. We did an update on it. There's a lot of good players that are outside like, that line.
There's a lot. Like right now, you have, these are the people right now that are in for the qualified play-in. You have Luke Sampson, Jeremy Colling, Bradley Williams, Nate Sexton, myself, Connor O'Reilly. Those are the people that are in the play-in position. And then outside of that, you've got names like Austin Hannum, Linus, Greg Barsby, Kale, Scott Withers, Presnell, Nicklaus, Cole Radalin, who's had a couple really good finishes.
Yeah. Ben
Callaway, Andrew Marweed. I mean, you can keep going down, but it's gonna get really interesting too, because it's like, it's also the points are really, really close too, right? Like 200 points right now, you're in 23rd, and 150, and you're not in. So there's only 50 points that are like separating like 10 spots right there. So it's going to get really interesting. And obviously now towards the end of the season, it's going to get real wild, because now you're going to have the people that front loaded. I mean, most people played in mostly everything, but there definitely are some people that like didn't travel, like Barsby, for example. Like he hasn't been at every Elite Series event. So now he's going to be adding points where other people are going to be like taking away their bad tournaments and adding in their good tournaments. So I think that's going to be kind of nuts coming down the wire.
Yeah, no, as soon as the drops start happening, it's going to get pretty wild. Cause I mean, someone like Dickerson he obviously knows he's going to be in, but it just is a matter of, you know, with how many events he's missing in the middle, pretty much just every event he plays counts to a certain extent.
Counts.
And so for him, you know, getting into that top four hasn't exactly proven to be as big of an advantage as, you know, they probably want it to be. But it is still somewhat of an advantage, because you are guaranteed to make it into a later stage if they keep it the same way this year.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's something where that's where it's going to get interesting, too, down the line. If someone like Dickerson is in a similar situation like you're saying, where every event he plays, he's going to be adding those points to his total versus maybe adding only the 45-point difference between his worst and his best or something like that. The point series are definitely going to get more and more entertaining as the year goes on, because also it's going to come into play is once these playoff events start in August, that's going to get interesting, because then there's going to be some events where some more notable pros might not even make a playoff event if they're outside the top 60 or whatever it may be. They might not make the second playoff event or something like that. So it's really going to get interesting towards the end of the year. I'm very excited to see how it plays out this year. I really like the playoff format.
Yeah, these last couple tournaments too, we've seen so many of the like the up-and-comers on tour too having incredible finishes, and so it's gonna get real exciting towards the end.
Yeah,
like you said, with everyone kind of battling for a couple spots.
Yeah, now I saw on Twitter where you'd put out and you'd asked for some recommendations or questions for debate night tonight.
I got some good ones.
You got some good ones?
I got some good ones.
Heck yeah. Sorry, Silas. We're gonna go to Twitter. We're gonna go to Twitter first. If you're on YouTube, you can put some in the YouTube chat if you have some topics you want. And Silas can sort through those. If there's any great ones, Silas will be sure to pull them out. But it sounds like we got some good ones coming from Twitter tonight.
Yeah, I picked out some.
Oh, Silas.
Just a little side note. I did a little research.
Side note, Silas. I love it. I'm muted. You just muted me.
What?
Oh, my headphone came off. Keep going. I'm sorry.
He stepped on his headphones. Anyway, on the match play event last year, the pot was 10 grand.
For the winner.
For the winner.
Yeah.
For the winner. So hopefully we're seeing a little bit more.
I would imagine it at least matches that.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
But yeah. Just thought it was interesting.
All right. Let's hear some Twitter takes.
All right. So let's talk about baskets here real quick. Obviously,
oh,
with the Coriolis situation. Should chains on baskets be removed for the Pro Tour? Reducing the ability to run putts at baskets with that much force would create more scoring separation and encourage touch along with accuracy. So this is like going back to like the old school, right?
Disc
golf used to just be a bowl. just used to be a pole, right?
Yeah.
But now I'm assuming he's saying like there's a pole, but then there's a basket. I don't think so. My whole thing is like if baskets are going to change at all to make it be more difficult, just keep it short and simple. They just need to be like brought in a little bit, but you need chains. You can't be playing with just a pole.
In regards to the Corey Ellis thing, though, there I think hopefully this opened someone's eyes in the charge somewhere. It got the basket was damaged, and when it got welded back, the TD or whoever went to fix the basket and made it too big, so a putter just fit. The fact that it happened on coverage is wild.
That's wild.
Like that could have happened to it could have happened to more people. I'm sure we would have heard about it by now. But if it happened to one person all round, he happened to be on lead card. That's crazy.
I guarantee if that would have happened at all this season, I would have known about it. I would have heard it.
No, I'm saying
I haven't
like
heard anyone talk about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, like during the Beaver State Clean Ground, everyone else played it. Well, on a normal basket, it can't happen. So that's what we talked about on Grip Lock. That I'm curious of, like what does the Pro Tour do? Is like that basket wouldn't technically be PDGA legal because it's been a modified. I don't know where the rules are, but like it's a modified approved basket. So like a disc, the basket like qualifications, a disc can't fit through there. So
in some
like what
when
happens?
They first told me that when they first told me that I can't remember who it was, but I was like in the parking lot after my round stretching. Someone was like, "Yeah, did you like?" They're talking about like the because I think at one point it was very close, and they're like, "Yeah, can you imagine if like Corey Ellis loses by one stroke?" And that happened. He's like, yeah, the putter just fell through the basket. And when someone told you, like, obviously, I think a lot of people learned about that from the video. But if just imagine someone like telling you that and like you trying to visually figure out what had actually happened. Like, I had no clue. I was like trying to wrap my brain around like fell through the bat. Like, what do you mean fell?
Yeah,
through?
Yeah, no, it doesn't make
someone
any sense.
Was like, someone was like, did he use like one of those like really like wobbly putters that you could fold up and it like somehow.
Yeah.
And I finally watched the video and it's like, no, that thing
just
like
fell through.
It just fell right
straight through.
That is so crazy. All right. That was from SSJ Char. This is from Chase Shipman. They want to know what means more, world rankings or ratings. So I'll say mine from two perspectives. The first one will be from a player's perspective. And then the second one will be I'll say both from a player's perspective, because I think player's perspectives actually are changing. So if you are a player and you are a well-established player already, and you already have your sponsorships and all everything like that locked in, the world ranking the rating might actually mean nothing to you. The world ranking means everything. If you're an up and coming player or you're not even on the pro tour yet, rating means everything and your world ranking probably means nothing because we've talked about this before, just the way sponsorships go, the way getting into tournaments and all that stuff. Rating is so much more important. So that's where I'll go. I don't know if you guys agree or disagree.
I fully agree. Yeah. I mean, I think over the past year or two, like if you asked this question a little while ago, world rankings didn't exist. Like UDisc wasn't doing them yet. The PDGA put them out at the end of the year. And so all there was ratings. So it's been a like slow transition where like media talks a lot more about world rankings than ratings just because world rankings are a more accurate stat for the pro tour and people who are consistently touring. I don't want to say more accurate stat, I guess. It's a more relevant stat for people who are consistently touring and stuff like that. Now, which world rankings you use, that's a whole different debate. But exactly what you said, like for me personally, I can't find my world ranking anywhere. So if I want to care about something and stack myself up against someone in the world, all I have is rating. Yeah. That's it. And when I go out and I play a PDGA tournament, like the rating is the only thing to care about beyond if I won or not. If I didn't win, I didn't cash, but I rated really well. That's the only other thing there is to care about. So I think for sub-1,000 rated players, non-touring players, amateurs, rating is what it is. But if you're talking in correlation to the the Pro Tour than world ranking all day.
All right. These are two tweets that are about the same thing. I'm going to read both of them because they kind of, one adds a little context to the other. So Mr. JC17, have you heard any players dropping out or struggling with current gas prices while on tour? And then the other tweet that is from Mostly Peaceful, asked the same basic thing, saying like, you know, large fuel guzzling vehicles, is this causing problems? 2,000 miles a month on tour in a 10 mile per hour per gallon vehicle runs about $1,000 a month at $5 a gallon. Last year's tour had that number at $500. So essentially, like, prices for gas going up so much, you know, people are now paying, you know, a lot of money when they're in these big vans and RVs and all that stuff. I'll be honest with you, I honestly have no clue how some people are touring. I have no idea how they even are doing it. I just looked at, you know, just to give some context, like, I didn't have that great of a Beaver State Fling. Like, I didn't play that well, but I didn't play like terrible. And I got 32nd and I won. How much money did I? How much money was that? Let me look here. So 32nd, took home, wait, what the heck? Hold on. Here we go. $310. So if I'm paying for everything, right? If my sponsor's not paying for stuff and it's all coming out of the Brody checkbook, like, how does that math make any sort of sense?
No, it's tough. It doesn't. And is the answer.
And then you look at the Majestic. Did you look at the payout for that? The Majestic. Crap. Why does it do that? Why is it sometimes take you to the one from 2021? Okay, Barsby just won the Majestic. To make the same amount of money I made on that, would I say it was Silas 310?
Yeah. Yeah,
if you got 34th place at the Majestic, you won $300. So 32nd place at Beaver State Fling, and just to give you like an idea, I hate ratings, but to give you an idea, 26th place, a 944 rated player got 26th place at the Majestic and won $330. Mm. And if you're Greg Barsby, you won $2,465.
Yeah.
And you beat people, and the people that you beat in the field, these are just people that I know, other touring pros. Evan Smith, Kale LaVisca,
Jordan Castro was there.
Dollar.
Right.
I guess you throw Matt Dollar in there. Now I see Jordan Castro, Clint Calvin. Hebenheimer was there. Noah Meitzma. That's it.
Yeah.
So, like, it's a wild thing to me to think of, like, I want the Disc Golf Pro Tour to make sense for people to go and tour. I want the Disc Golf Pro Tour best players, but ultimately, like, it does not make sense to play on the Disc Golf Pro Tour a lot of times.
No, you got, yeah, it's a very, very tough, I don't know, I would love to see, and there's no way for this would ever happen, I would love to see financials of some of the people touring and just be like, where is this coming? Because I know some people, like, supplement their income with side hustles, driving for, like, yep, Instacart, DoorDash, Uber Eats, stuff like that while they're on the mm-hmm. road, and that makes a lot of sense. Some people...
Or they do clinics, or they sell discs, and they do all that.
Yeah,
stuff,
yeah. And there's a lot of other ways. I remember one guy, I think he still does it, but I don't think he does it... I don't think he plays disc golf anymore, but he was, like, semi-touring disc golf. And I asked someone, because, like, he would pop up random places, and, like, when he rolled up, like, I was, like, pretty impressed with him. Not play-wise, just, like, I forget exactly the whole situation, but I asked someone, like, what is this guy's story? And the dude is running, like, pages on Instagram that had like hundreds of thousands of followers and was just doing like sponsored posts and like had like three or four of them that he was just running. And so he just kind of like worked from home and then played disc golf for some fun here and there. And so, yeah, like
I've
feel like
people
there's
people doing like roofing and stuff.
Yeah, like I feel like there's a lot of random stories of like people who do stuff and they're on the pro tour, but it's like they can work from wherever they're going. And so they like pick up side jobs, pick up, you know, like DoorDash is a very common one, I think, stuff like that. Obviously, the goal is eventually if you're on the tour and you can place the top 20 a few times throughout the season, or like if you can place top 20 like once a month, then you're golden. That's kind of the eventual goal. And I think the tour is heading there. It might already be there in some facets, but I think that that's why you see some players like obviously Dickerson with his new contract. It's not a financial, well, it might still be a financial decision just being smart with money, but like there's sometimes where it's like going to the West Coast, if you're driving out there and you're looking at the tour events out there, you're like, I'm gonna drive all the way out there for, you know, four or five events.
Oh,
it just doesn't make sense. I can go home.
Yeah, I wasn't like last cash. I was probably like, I think I was almost like middle, like lower middle of the pack. Cause I think I pretty much got like 30th or around 30th at all four events.
Yeah.
So like I was like the middle of the pack cashing at every single event. And from flights, from hotels and food. And then, you know, obviously, too, you got to factor in, like, the actual cost of, you know, registering. And then we actually paid for the last two Portland events. We actually paid for parking. So it was $5 to park at Beaver State Fling. So I was out there Monday through Sunday. I was $35 to park. But you start doing the math and you're just like, holy cow, like, I actually made no money. I actually lost a lot of money going out there. And it'd be interesting to see, like you said, the financials of a pro that's touring.
Yeah.
With the disc golf pro tour. And then it'd be interesting to see the financials of a pro that basically finds all the big A tiers that are still kind of in a drivable distance that coincide with tour events. Because if you can find a big A tier event, AKA the Majestic, that is happening during a pro tour event, you only really have to beat like five people.
Yeah.
Where you look at the Beaver State Fling, you're having to beat like 50, 60 people, maybe more now. I don't know actually what the number is now realistically, but, you know, it's a crazy thing. Like,
yeah,
you can bounce around. If you like win a handful of tournaments here and there, like you could easily make $50,000 off of disc golf. Like not obviously, not minus your expenses, but I'm just saying like your income, you could easily make $50,000 a year if you're just playing a couple flex starts throughout the week and then just finding those big A tiers. Because like I said, like Greg Barsby just took home $2,600, and not to discount that win at all. Obviously the Majestic is a big tournament and lots of players go there, but if you look at the actual field of players that went there, he really is only having to compete against a handful of guys.
Yeah.
Versus the Preserve, you know, next weekend, I mean, you're now having to probably, I mean, the Preserve, you probably have to beat like 70 or 80 people.
Yeah, and not even to mention like A tiers, if the field's full, you still get sponsor bonuses and stuff. For players who like,
oh yeah,
even don't even have
think about that.
Because I remember I had a contract with Prodigy, just like a basic entry level pro contract. The only way I would make money is bonuses. So it was like if at a C tier, if it was like a completely full tournament, then they valued that because like your speech at the end is to a full tournament. B tier was slightly less people have required, but more money. A tier the same, and then it also like as you went up, it was like you had to win the C tier. This is completely made up things, but you had to win the C tier, come top three at the B tier, come top five at the A tier, come top 15 at an NT, come 20 at a major, something like that. But then it had a bonus structure. So I'm sure there's tons of players who are pros sponsored on like the lower end of the pro tour that have a very similar thing, and it's like, yeah, you could go to the Silver Series pro tour and have to come top 20 to get a bonus, or I could go to this A tier like you're saying and only have to come top five to get a bonus and stuff like that. And we also saw, like, for a while when Dickerson, before, you know, this year he went a little more out west, but for a while that's what he was doing. He was just chilling around Tennessee. He'd play the East Coast swing events and some of the Midwest events, but he just dominated Tennessee, North Carolina, you know, that whole region.
I mean,
and made his living. And, like, that's the way to get into the Pro Tour.
Let me just list off some names of people that didn't cash at a Silver Series event, which, again, back in the day, last year, Silver Series, we were like, it's not that big. Like, you even still think a Silver Series win is like, shouldn't count.
It's a Silver Series. That's why. It has nothing to do with the field.
But these are people that aren't even cashing at the last event. Eric Oakley, Calvin Heimberg, Chris Clemens, James Proctor, Tristan Tanner, Nicholas Carl, Nathan Queen, Andrew Presnell, AJ Carey. Then it kind of drops off after that.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, that's, I mean, the fact that you can list off like 5 to 10 pretty well known touring pros, like, this is becoming more and more of a theme. And in the past, I think, you know, all these people are incredible disc golfers, to where if they go to an event, they're almost assuming, not even assuming, they're almost guaranteeing themselves, like, well, yeah, I'm going to cash. And I think that has been the biggest storyline this year, is there are so many good players now in these fields that someone has to not cash. Like, there has to be some people that just don't cash.
Yeah.
And, eventually it's going to get crazier and crazier, of where we start seeing, you know, crazier jumps and swings and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the next one. I said that was a fascinating topic. I think when you get into the financials of everything too, like, we've always talked about it, like, you know, what does the retirement plan of a 40-year-old disc golf pro look like?
Yeah.
Like, what does that look like? Those things just are very fascinating.
And healthcare, right, too. We've seen that come up some recently with that. I think Emerson Keith was the most recent, but I mean, Johnny McRae was the obvious one. He actually just won a tournament, first tournament back from his heart attack and that whole thing.
He won the tournament. I saw him throw his first shot. I'm pretty positive.
Yeah, he won a C tier and had, like, he posted his acceptance speech and all that. It was awesome. But yeah, I mean, stuff like that is stuff that you have to, like, be thinking through. You know, and it just fascinates me, because I would just love to see, like, what percentage of income's coming from where, and, like, I'm sure there's some guys that have, like, 6 or 7 income streams and they've really diversified and they're being smart with it. And I'm sure there are other, like, if I don't cash today, I don't get to drive to Minnesota. Like, I think it'd be fascinating to learn. But
okay, Anthony Soto says, how much should Elite Series event tickets cost? Or to put it in another way, what is the correct balance of high enough price to profitable versus affordable enough to be attractive?
Man, that's tough.
I mean, this is definitely not my expertise. I'll be the first to say, like, I have no clue. I think the one thing I will say is, I think having, like, a structured set of tickets, if that makes sense, of where you have the regular spectator passes. This just gives you general admission and you can basically just go to, like, the normal spots. Then you have, like, what they've been doing, which is, like, the VIP or whatever you want to call it. And you get to, like, actually walk with groups. Heck, you can even sell, like, inside the ropes. You can sell suite passes. There's a lot of different variations that you can go about it. But I think that, I don't know what the heck the prices would be. I literally have no clue.
Yeah.
But I think having a wide range of, like, if you just don't care and you just want to go to the event, $10. But if you want all the bells and whistles, $75 a day. And giving people the option.
I definitely think, in my opinion, I think the one issue I've noticed somewhat with the ticket pricing is, I feel like the barrier to entry, if you just want to show up to an event, is too high. I think the general admission seems to be a bit steep, but I don't know the right ratio or stuff like that, because, like, obviously you can say, oh, just make general admission like $10. But then they still need to have an expectation of, like, it might be the only people that are showing up are the same people that are willing to pay $40 for general admission or $30 for general admission or whatever it is. And so if they cut it down to 10, they're not going to get three times as many people. They're going to get the same amount of people and just be losing $20 a head. So it's a tough one. I don't really know. I just feel like, to me, it depends on what the goal is. Because like, if the goal is to draw in, you know, be doing local advertising, draw in people who are just curious, have never watched disc golf before, anything like that, I feel like $30, $25, you know, it varies tournament to tournament. I feel like that for like a day general admission pass is like a big ask for someone who is like, hasn't watched disc golf before. But for someone who is a diehard disc golf fan, that's nothing. That's fine.
Well, I think it also like, it definitely matters like what you actually are showing up, right?
Yeah.
Like Beaver State Fling, for example, had to pay for parking to get in because you're paying. I believe it's in a national park. It had the national park vibes. So I believe you're paying to get into the national park. So everyone's paying $5 just to park. And then on top of that, you're paying whatever the fees are to actually get into the tournament. But you're going to a national park. Like you're going to a public park that you could go to anytime that you wanted. And if I go there and I don't see any changes, like if there's nothing really different than when I go there, when the tournament's not there, I'm going to be really second guessing, like, why the heck am I spending this much money?
Yeah.
Like when you go to any sporting event, obviously, you're going there to watch the sporting event. We'll just say, because the NBA finals are happening, we'll go with the NBA finals. You're paying the money to go to watch the NBA finals. But when you go there, there are a lot of things that you probably like, what's the word I'm looking for? Where like, it's the whole idea, like mints, like when you go to an Italian restaurant and you take a mint at the end of your dinner and you're like, oh, that's a free mint. And it's like, no, that's not really a free mint. Like all that's factored in.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like how it's
back to the free mint metaphor. Been here. I love it.
Yeah. So it's factored into it, but like, you know, the cheerleaders, the halftime show, the people walking around with concessions so you don't have to get up, the nice, well, sometimes nice bathrooms, all these things that when you go to a basketball game, you're just like, you know, are going to be there. I don't know yet if disc golf is there, and especially it's definitely like you're talking about, it's event to event, right?
Yeah.
Like if you went to the OTB event and you went to Masters Cup, you got two very different events of what one gave you and what the other one gave you. And so that's where I think it's going to be tricky in knowing like how much you can charge, because if you're just charging and you're showing up and you're like, I'm paying $40 to walk around a park and watch disc golf, that seems kind of pricey, versus I'm paying $40. There's really good parking. There's, there's bathrooms wherever I need them. There's food places. There's beer tents. There's TVs with leaderboards and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like now, all of a sudden, that $40 doesn't seem as crazy. I think that's where it's going to be tough.
Yeah. No, it's definitely an interesting one. It's going to be interesting to see how it continues to develop. I mean, a step in the right direction, or at least with the right intentions, in my mind at least, is the like concert series. I don't know if that's like the best example, but it's
kind of like a festival.
Yeah, in my mind, it's a step in the right direction of like, we're adding more than you're just showing up and watching a random tournament. Like, at least there's more there going
on. Can I say this though?
Yes.
Can I say this? And this, not to be controversial at all, or not to like put anything down, I don't know how much money they're putting into that side of the thing, the concert side. My question, I'll just pose this as a question, like, could that money be better spent? Because when you have all the other things figured out, like when you have all the bathrooms and all the suites and all the bleachers and all everything's figured out, and it's like you want to add something on top of that, sure, let's add concerts. But when you don't have all that stuff met, should we be spending more money on a concert? I did see someone, I don't know, I believe it was Corey Wong, I think, that performed recently. And my guess is because he is a disc golf fan and because he has done stuff with the Disc Golf Pro Tour and Jomez and all that stuff, My guess is like he probably didn't charge the disc golf pro. He might not even charge them anything. Yeah. Honestly, who knows? But someone did like find what his rates were, and I think it was like something along the lines of like $30,000 for an event, or whatever. Like if we're paying, if the disc golf pro tour is paying $30,000 for Corey Wong to do a performance in front of however many fans showed up, I don't know if that money could have been spent better elsewhere.
No, that's
because
a great
like
point.
I said, there are things as like when spectators come to the event that aren't there yet, and I think getting those all, you know, dotting all those I's and crossing all those T's need to be done before money goes elsewhere. My guess is Corey Wong probably did it pro bono.
Yeah.
Just did it as a, you know, as
well,
a
He's the director of music, or someone actually put, yeah, I think director of music is his technical title for the Pro Tour. Like he's the one who's kind of like,
what the heck is that?
He's like heading up these concerts
in
a way. Yeah. You didn't see that announcement? We talked about it on the show. Yeah. He's like, he's the one that's like somewhat heading up the
director of music.
I think that's what he's, I'll find him. Corey Wong, Pro Tour.
That's wild.
Pro Tour. Limited series. Corey Wong is Disc Golf Pro Tour music director.
What?
What does that mean?
I think he's like, I think he's like helping them get these things set up.
Outside of the so he's not doing like the music in like the production of the disc golf
network. No, I think it's more so like, I guess from what I understand, he's more like the concert director, I guess would be a better title. I don't think
for a disc golf company.
Yeah, I don't think he's doing the actual like music producing. No, I mean it's wild. I like the idea behind it, if that makes sense. But I get what you're saying is like there's a time to implement that.
Love Liv then. That's what Liv's kind of doing with their tours, like making it kind of like a festival thing. But
like I think disc golf fits that a lot better than golf, though. I'll say that. I think disc golf.
No one's showing
already
up to those things, though, Hunter. One's showing up to those
things. Golf. Disc golf. If you had a disc golf tournament in the middle of a festival.
Have you seen the videos?
No, the concert. Yeah. No. I'm saying that's the right mind track, but that's step 10. We skipped steps 1 through 8 to get there, if that makes sense.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Like, it's not like you're not.
Well, you also have Kevin Jones opening for a like slow. What type of music? Like almost folk artist?
Yeah,
I don't know,
but Kevin.
Classical. Almost.
Kevin Jones's song was actually kind of fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of fire.
Yeah.
The
and
two
like,
but just
my
contrast.
Point,
but they didn't seem like they lined up the two types of music very well. It's just something.
My point is you're not getting someone to buy a ticket to the Disc Golf Pro Tour because X artist is performing and you get access to that artist.
No, I think it would be another value add to a long list of value adds.
That's only happening when you're bringing in an artist that's like a massive artist to where like, then you're going to get random people that might be on the fence of going to a disc golf tournament to be like, oh, yeah, I definitely want to go see Jack Johnson perform.
Well, that's what their idea was when they announced it, was the tickets to the concert are being sold to the community. And then if you have a ticket to the event, you get a discounted ticket to the concert. So their hope was to get the community drawn into the concert and then drawn into the event.
You just have to.
My question, if that's the goal.
You just have to pay the crap ton to get one of those like big performers out there.
Well, my question is,
I think a lot of festivals aren't very profitable.
Yeah. Well, like if the goal is to get the community involved in the community to the Pro Tour event, I think it goes back to a question you posed a few episodes ago of like, could they have spent that same money on like radio ads, a billboard, you know, 5 miles from the course, put something in the local newspaper. We just lost Brody's camera. Oh, he's back. Okay. Put something in the local newspaper. What like local advertising to a sense in the like 2-3 weeks leading up to the event. Like if
can
the
I,
goal
can I
is to get
something?
The community in, would that draw more people than a concert series?
Can I pose something?
Yeah.
You go to a bunch of schools, okay, and you don't do these like after school. Like, hey, if you guys want to learn about disc golf, like hang out after school. You go to these schools and you get them to do some sort of like assembly
pizza right? party
of yeah. where they're bringing their what are we talking about? Assembly where they're
immediate kids are excited.
Hey, what's wrong with the pizza party?
You say pizza party, free disc golf, free pizza, disc golf, boom, every kid's there.
No, you're doing something in school when the kids are actually there. So like you're either saying like, hey, we'll help your PE teachers out,
yeah,
and we'll teach your students disc golf. So you have kids coming through, and you give every kid a free ticket to the Disc Golf Pro Tour event that's in the town. Now, if the kid wants to go and his parents are going to go with him, like his parents have to buy tickets, right? And
yeah,
you can sell those tickets at the door, whatever. There's no door, but you can sell them at the actual event, which I don't know if they're actually doing right now. I think they need to do that too. I think they need to do it to where you can just show up. I think you already have to have tickets before you can go. I don't think they're selling tickets at the events. Like whenever I've driven into these events, I don't see anywhere where you can buy tickets.
Yeah. That'd be an interesting one to look into.
That'd be a problem.
Yeah. Cause like, but if you hit up,
if you hit up like four or five different schools, let's just say, and you got in, you got the physical, you know, you got into the PE, you started doing like trick shots with the disc, started throwing, like skipping it off the ground and having it go into the basket, getting the kids excited, yada, yada, yada. And then you get like a fraction of those kids to come out. Like, I don't even know if that's even going to cost any money. That's just going to cost some time.
Yeah.
I think then, I don't know. At the same time, like I think a lot of these events have just been selling out too.
Another issue is like we don't like there's not much more space.
It's a venue selection.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's a venue selection.
What are we even talking about? They're not struggling selling out these venues. So all right, let's go on to the next one.
That's the venue selection thing. You need if selling out a course or event is a 400 person gallery following lead card, we need to go to a course that can support 10 times that.
Yeah.
Like every Pro Tour event, you should be able to have 2,000-4,000 people walking with lead card. That should be a standard.
We definitely are in the stage right now where we don't want to turn anyone away.
Yeah, exactly.
Like if you want to pay to come watch disc golf, we shouldn't be like, sorry.
Yeah.
We're out.
Yeah.
Okay. Clara's dad says, I think this is fascinating, and I'm really curious to see what you guys have to say on this.
Okay.
Is throwing a bad shot in the water littering/fineable? If yes, how many counts/fines do you have on film? What would you do if charged? If no, how is it different than throwing a large McDonald's cup in a lake? I think this is a fascinating question.
I guess it's similar to is fishing when you lose a lure littering.
I would say it's actually more similar probably to like golfing if you hit a golf ball into the water.
Well, that's fair too. But I think it's really the whole idea is the same. Well, I guess fishing, a lot of times they try to make like biodegradable lures and stuff, but how?
That I have no idea. Well, because people actually go into lakes to get golf balls out. So like if you went to the ocean and you just start blasting golf balls into the ocean.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
If you went to some random lake that a golf course is nowhere near and you start hitting golf balls into the lake. Sure. I think those are probably both really bad things to do and you probably shouldn't do it. But when you're hitting a golf ball into a lake or river, or you're throwing a frisbee into a lake or whatever near a course, one, I think a lot of people go in and get it themselves if they can. And if they can't, a lot of these places that I've gone to, they have like divers and stuff that like eventually at a certain point in time, they go in and pick up. And like golf, they do that a lot. You see some really, really cool photos of people like cleaning out the bottom of the lakes and stuff, of where they just have like these ginormous bags of golf balls. And I think we've seen the same thing with disc golf too, where someone will go in with a snorkel or a scuba or whatever it is and just get all these discs. So I think when it comes to like playing on a course and you have like Eagles Crossing is a perfect example, right? There's a lot of water out there. My guess is eventually they'll probably have someone go in and clean out.
I feel like they said they rake it. I could be completely wrong here. I want to say they rake them every day at Eagles Crossing.
I could be completely wrong there, but I wouldn't be surprised.
They definitely rake them very frequently. Because I threw a disc in the water and someone was like, oh, you'll get that back for sure. They rake these things all the time. So, but yeah, that kind of goes with what you were saying. But I mean, like the local courses around here, Independence Park has water and you're not allowed to go in the water to retrieve a disc, but the Parks and Rec Department rakes the lake, the like common areas disc go in, gets them all out and calls people and be like, hey, we got it at the Parks and Rec Department, come up and grab it. No other place near here really has water other than like a creek bed, but you go in and get that. But I mean, a lot of courses, like I think you make a good point there. Like if I were to just show up to Smith Mountain Lake, which is just like the big lake around here, 45 minutes away, no disc golf course, and I were to just chuck a disc in, like, yeah, that's 100% littering. But if you're on a disc golf course and a disc goes in and you can grab it out. If not, it's a common thing because we're all playing, to where most of these courses either allow someone from the club to go in and dive or have someone who rakes for them or allow someone to like rake. And does it get up every disc? No, but it's a similar thing of, you know, the intent isn't you're throwing a disc into the water to leave it forever. The intent is you're trying to make it to a hole and you lost it in the water and someone will come and grab it eventually. Now, it wouldn't surprise me if in the future more like biodegradable, I guess it's got to be the right word, but like something that, like, you know, if it spends X amount of time in water can dissolve or whatever. It wouldn't surprise me if like that started to happen in disc golf. I just don't know how it would affect the actual plastic quality of the disc, but like I could see like that being a thing that caught on. But for the most part, I think a lot of the courses just have people that retrieve pretty much is every disc that goes in the water.
And I think too, like some of these courses, like Memorial, for example, like that big lake, there's nothing alive in that lake. Like there's nothing living in that lake. It's impossible.
Why is it impossible?
Lake is toxic.
Oh, yeah.
The amount of goose poop in that lake, there is no way anything can survive it. So essentially, you're throwing a disc in a pool. Like you're not throwing a disc in a. I think it gets trickier when you start like having to talk about courses that are like in natural or national parks or in kind of these nice, environmental areas, and you're throwing discs into those lakes and stuff and ponds. I think that's where it gets a little trickier than, you know, some of the courses that we play on tour, or simply like there's just nothing in that lake. So it's not like you're ruining, you know, some sort of fish habitat or anything like that.
Yeah, because that's what there's a course like an hour and a half away in Charlottesville, just outside Charlottesville, called Walnut Creek, and it's on in like a gorgeous park. And it has a really nice lake that you throw over a few times. We did our monthly match last month there. And
Heck yeah.
They have one of my friends, actually it's Josh from Overthrow, if you're a fan of Overthrow. He used to have permission from the park to go out there and dive, and he would collect hundreds and hundreds of discs from the bottom there. And I think now someone in the local club does it. But I think that's like the common thing is someone's an approved diver or an approved raker and just gets them out. But yeah, I mean, if you just walk up to a random lake and are like, oh, I want to chuck it from here to the other side and see if I can do it, and it goes in the water and you just leave it forever, I think that's the same as just chucking a water bottle in the lake.
Yeah, you're pretty much a scumbag. All right. Aaron wants to know what's worse. I'm gonna get Silas, you're gonna go first on hear your opinion.
Oh, heck yeah.
I'm curious. Silas is, for those that don't know, Silas is on the Can I Get to 900 rated train.
Heck yeah.
He's on the path. Has that started yet? Has the training start yet?
Not yet. I need to set a baseline. I need to get started. Haven't officially.
You need to work on putting. That's something that you can start.
Hey, I trained last night.
He was on fire at our weekly last night.
Last night I trained like a what was it, like 60 feet?
Yeah.
60 footer. It's pretty electric, but it was good.
Well, if you get decent enough like inside the circle putting, you will be 900 rated in no time.
It's definitely gotten better. I think now what's lacking is my distance. Mm. It's just not quite there.
It's consistency.
Distance with putting?
No, just driving.
I'm telling you right now, though, distance, like people that are like, oh, all I need to do to get better is like be able to throw. You don't. That's not what's stopping you from being better. I'm telling you right now, Silas, focus on putting and focus on consistency off the tee.
If you can throw a consistent 250 to 300 foot shot,
fine.
That you know where it's going to land.
You can be over 900.
Yeah, and you can hit your putts inside like 20 feet. You're going to be like 950 rated.
You're like,
really?
Yeah, easily.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Easily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We might have to put that to the test.
Yeah, if you get a shot that every time 300 feet, you know where it's going, and you're hitting inside 25 feet,
Silas,
you could probably win a local open tournament.
Silas, next time I come up there, I will play Fallen Creek Reds.
Okay.
Okay? And I will not, I will not throw a shot over 250 feet.
Okay. And you'll be
and we'll see
over
what
900.
See
what happens.
So we'll see what my rating would be.
Okay.
So like if I throw a shot 275,
yeah,
it just comes back 25 feet to 250 on that same line. So I'll obviously try to do my best to not throw over 250, but if it ends up going like 270, 280, it just comes back to 250 on that line. And we'll see what I shoot at Fallen Creek. How many holes can I birdie out there?
Oh, that's what I'm trying to. I'm gonna look at that's the XL layout. Let me look at what red. Okay, red layout, 900.
How many holes are under 250?
So the red layout, you just have to shoot two under to shoot 900 rated at on the red.
Mm.
And Brody shot 19 under.
I was gonna say I feel like I've
18 under.
I feel like I've shot. Hold on.
So hole one I can birdie, hole two I can birdie, hole three I can birdie. Hole four, I can birdie. Hole five, I can birdie. Hole six, I can birdie. Hole seven, I can birdie. Hole eight, I can birdie. Hole nine, I can birdie. Hole 10, I can birdie. Hole 11 will be tough.
You only got to get two. You only got to get two.
250 would put me at 70 feet on 11. So that's tough. Hole 12, I can birdie. Hole 13, I can birdie. Hole 14, I can birdie. Hole 15, I can birdie. Hole 16, I can birdie. Hole 17, I can birdie.
Wait, 16?
Hole 18, I can.
Oh, par four. 16 is a par four. Yeah.
480 feet, par four.
Yeah.
So pretty much, you
par four.
If you went perfect,
I can shoot 16
or 17 under. Yeah. If you went like perfect, like you didn't mess it up.
Yeah.
If I didn't mess it up.
And that's only throwing 250. You throw farther than 250.
Yeah.
So.
And I only have to get two of those holes, Silas.
And then three everything else. That puts it in perspective, Silas. You need to play for a lot more pars. You're at a point
I was at my
like freshman or sophomore year in disc golf. Where our like disc golf coach, he was like talk with different players about different things they needed to work on. And with me, my problem was, I think it's a similar thing you're doing right now, was I would look at a hole and I knew my best shot could birdie it for me. And so I would try to birdie it.
Yeah.
But he was like, by doing that, you're bogeying it way more than you're birdieing it. Mm. Versus if you just threw the shot you're consistent with and got to like 70 feet, 80 feet, then just laid up and took a three. Like, he told me, you got to play par golf. And so I did that. I played par golf, and then I'd find birdies here and there when I could get them, and I started shooting under par when I was shooting, like, way over par. And then eventually, he like, sat me down. He was like, all right, stop playing par golf. Like, you need to get aggressive again. And that's when my game, like, really took off, because then I was, like, already had the mindset that helped me with my scrambling of knowing how to play par golf when I needed to, and then knowing when to birdie. Now all of that's gone for me now. But there was a point where, you know, it made sense.
Yeah, Silas, you are in the stage that I was in. I say like a year and a little bit ago, of where I was trying to shoot the best score possible. Like, I was going into a tournament being like, how can I play these holes to give me the best chance to shoot well?
Yeah,
and. Like Hunter was saying, like, I'm now transitioning to like, how do I have to play this tournament to win? And those two things are very, very different. Of where, you know, there might be, this is a perfect example. One of the holes on Beaver State Fling is 400 feet, and it's a par three onto a very, very small island. if you play that hole for par, it's very easy. You throw like a 350-foot shot short, and then you just chip up on the island and take your par. But if you're trying to win the tournament, you have to play that hole to birdie it.
Right.
And so you're throwing this shot to try, you know, you're throwing a 400-foot shot to try to land on something smaller than circle one. And how you play that hole, I think, has, you know, obviously depends on where you are in your game. Yeah. And I think where you are in your game right now is you look at a hole like that and you got to be like, all right, what's the easiest way of me of parring this? Because my chances of birding this are very small. And you need to look at those holes like that. And then you need to look at holes that are, you know, let's say hole one on Fallen Creek Reds, right? Where it's just that little hyzer forehand off to the right.
Yeah.
There's no reason not to try to birdie that hole.
Right.
Because there's not like a gap you're trying to hit. There's nothing. Yeah, there's no problem of you trying. Yeah. So that one, yes, be aggressive and try to park it. There's no reason not to. But there's other holes where you might try to be like, well, if I throw this really great shot, I'm going to have only 100 feet in and be able to get birdie on it. And it's like, well, no, maybe you should just throw like an easy 200-foot shot to give yourself another 200-foot shot. So that way you take bogey out of play. So I think that's the biggest misconception to a lot of people when I hear about them being like, well, I want to get better at disc golf. I just need to be a throw farther. It's like, no. You need to be able to putt well inside of like 25 feet.
Yeah.
And you need to be able to get up and down more than you don't inside of 200 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do those two things, you will start to see your score just drop.
Yeah.
Having throw farthers.
Yeah, I definitely feel like the putting is getting there.
That's what you need, man.
Getting more confident with it. So,
okay, well, let's hear your guys' thoughts on this. This is from Aaron. He wants to know what's worse: lots of rain with not much wind, or lots of wind with no rain.
That's easy. That is so easy.
I'll take wind over rain any day.
What?
Not even close. Not even close. Wind over rain.
No, I'm doing
it's not this. Even close.
Why? What makes wind sucks?
How much? So we're talking talking a lot of rain, like umbrellas, pointless like rain.
No. Like Beaver State thing of where it's you have to have an umbrella and you have to have multiple towels.
I think I'd rather play in rain.
I'd rather play in rain.
I think rain's a mindset game, whereas wind, it's like actually going to affect you. Rain, you can go in.
You're going over like score.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to enjoy either. I'm just thinking I'd rather show up.
I will still see nothing annoys me more than having to clean my disc every 5 seconds.
Mm.
Like if we're talking about practice, oh my gosh, like rain is so annoying because what I throw 5 practice shots and now I'm spending 2 minutes getting all the mud off my disc.
Practice or casual round, I'd rather do wind for sure. I'm thinking tournament. Tournament, I'm choosing rain.
I'm thinking score wise, I'm choosing rain. Oh,
even tournament, like I don't need a caddy when it's windy. I need a caddy when it's rainy or it becomes so much more.
I just know like if it's raining out, I can count out like half the field. Because they're just not going to mentally show up whenever, whatever tournament I'm showing to. Because it's like, if you go into a rain round knowing, hey, this is going to suck, and you just accept that before you get to the first tee, really won't be that bad. Like if you make your expectation,
you still have to dry your disc.
Yeah, but if you expect it to be way worse than it's going to be, and you get out there, you'll be like, oh, this really isn't nowhere near as bad as I thought. And you can just like,
I just don't get your way
through the round versus like all the time. Wind, you might just not know where a disc is going to land.
Here's an idea. All right. What if you had a disc dryer built into a disc golf cart?
How would it dry all the discs?
You just have airflow.
So it's just like one dryer, like one slot you put one disc in?
It's like the dehydration machine.
What? What is that?
Like when you dehydrate fruit or something.
Oh,
Yeah. Or jerky.
You put like a... And it like sucks all the stuff out and becomes a banana chip.
I would pay
$250 for that.
There we go.
No, legitimate. Like if there was something where I could pick up my wet, muddy disc and I put it in something and it like at first like washes it, so it just like somehow shoots a bunch of water on it, gets all the mud off, and it sucks all the water off, and then it, like, beeps, and, like, I know my disc is done. I pull it out, and it's, I would pay $250 for that.
That could be no the next, problem. Next biggest disc golf technology advancement right there.
There you go.
I despise getting mud and water off my disc. I just hate how long it takes.
Someone all said right, an 18 volt heat gun would work.
There we go.
He's like, bring it out. And might
how
melt
long
your disc.
Is that gonna take?
But yeah, I mean, it's going to be great when it's done.
Oh, here's a two sided squeegee that you slide your disc through.
Have y'all ever seen the, there used to be that product. I don't know if it's still out there or not, but it was a pouch that was also a towel. I think it was literally called a touch. I'm pretty positive. And you just slid the disc in. And then, like, as you got it out, you, like, used your hands on the outside of the pouch to, like, move it out. And it was supposed to be, like, a towel that just went around your disc and got the whole thing done. Yeah. So all you did was put it in, push it out, it's done.
I feel like that would get really clogged up, though.
Probably. I never used it. I saw it.
Good idea.
I had two towels on my bag. And so I'd have my hand in one towel on the disc and my hand on the other towel cleaning. That's all you need. That's all you need.
Yeah.
You don't need to have any crazy invention. That's all you need.
Yeah. Okay. You got the job done.
Donnie Lucas. Last one I got here. Would you rather play with a group of trash talkers or a group that never talks?
Trash
talker. I'm assuming.
100%.
This has to be a casual round.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. A group that never talks is way worse, period, to play with. It gets way more in my head.
You want trash talkers during a professional round?
Yeah.
I think like I want it.
I don't even think that's illegal.
That'd make the round way more fun. People who just don't talk, like, it just gets in my head because, like, I sit down, I'm like, all right. Like, it's way more intimidating to me than if someone's like,
I don't know. I've had rounds like that, though, where it's like, but you got to think too, like, things are changing. I think it's also different when you're talking about your casual round, or not casual, but you're talking about like
a local person.
You're showing up to an event. Yeah. Cause it's you and three people. And that's where on the pro tour, obviously you got caddies, you've got other, you know, you got plus ones, if you will. You've got camera people, disc golf pro tour people, you got spectators, you got all that stuff. I could totally see how if it's like you're at your local flex start and it's you and three people and no one's talking.
Yeah, I've been on those cards. Like, it's so awkward.
That could be stupid.
Yeah, it'd be a 3-hour round and it feels like it took seven hours.
But how is it not more awkward where like you throw your first tee shot and you shank it into a tree and someone's like, "You're trash, kid."
Because that's funny. I'm laughing immediately.
And you turn around and they're on your car.
Like, that's amazing. I'm laughing immediately at that.
No.
Yeah, like, if I'm getting trash talked, I can laugh at myself.
I don't think you're laughing. Knowing you, I think you would be getting so pissed.
Is it someone you know or just some random person?
No. It's three random people.
No, if someone...
Like, it's Trevor, random people.
If someone's just coming after me, like, saying stuff that just, like, isn't funny, isn't even attempting to be funny, like it's just straight mean.
Yes, that's what trash talkers are.
No, trash talk's hilarious.
No, we're not
trash
talking
hilarious.
Hey, we are not talking about you and Trevor just chatting it up.
No, I'm saying trash talk in general
trash
is funny.
Talking
like,
is
if
not
you,
hilarious.
If you're creative enough, trash talk is funny. Yes.
You gotta put time into it.
Well, like a good trash talker is funny. Like, there's no way
not when they are trash talking you, though.
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole point of
trash
talking.
I get trash talked in basketball all the time, and it was funny every time.
Because they were probably bad at it. They were probably bad trash talkers.
Maybe. But, like,
it's annoying. That's the whole point of it, is they get inside your head.
Yeah.
A good trash talker gets inside your head.
Maybe I've never met a good trash talker. Maybe I've never met a good trash talker. Because, like, I can get some people to get under my skin, but I don't think it's going to, like, ruin my game.
There's no way
it's going to make my game more fun. Because, like, if nothing else, it's going to make me care more. If no one's talking, I'm eventually just going to, like, internally trash talk myself into sucking. If it's just me and my thoughts.
Have you heard the famous line that Jordan said to Karl Malone?
I don't know.
When they were playing in the finals.
I'm not sure.
And Karl Malone, Karl Malone was on the free throw line late in the game. I don't know what game it was, but like the game was close and it was Sunday of the NBA Finals. And Jordan literally, before he takes his free throw, says, "The mailman doesn't deliver on Sunday."
That's funny.
Said that.
Like that's funny.
That's the mail. Karl Malone is the mailman. Yeah. That's his nickname.
That's
the mailman.
Funny. That's legendary.
There's no way Karl Malone looked at him and started smiling and laughing and be like, "Ha ha, that's a good one, Jordan." Like,
that is a good one. No, like, way. You got, like, yeah, there's no way
not,
around it.
He's not laughing at that.
Pippen.
You got to respect it. If someone comes up with
Scottie
a good Pippen. One, you got to respect
apologies.
It. Like,
Lasagna fixed me. It was Scottie Pippen.
Yeah.
I'm saying a good trash talker
like,
is
that's
not
funny.
Someone.
That's funny. If someone says that to me, I don't care. I'm
that
laughing
would
immediately.
Be
I'm going,
funny if
right.
you were that person no. about to make
yeah,
a free throw
then
to
I immediately,
tie the game.
I immediately am like, all right, funny. Time to prove him wrong. Like, now I have a chip on my shoulder.
You wouldn't be laughing.
If everyone's saying they're dead silent, like,
see, what you just said is the whole point. The whole point of you being like, all right, now I'm going to prove that. Like, the point of trash talking, like, when we were playing
that's
Ultimate
way
Frisbee,
better
for
than
example,
being that's way better than being silent. I'm going to play out. Better hold with on, trash talkers.
Out. Hold on. Hear me out. When we were playing Ultimate Frisbee and we knew someone couldn't throw a forehand and they only could throw a backhand, we would literally yell, "He doesn't have a forehand. He won't throw a forehand. He can't throw a forehand." And exactly what you just said is what we try to get into other people's heads of being like, "Oh, you don't think I have a forehand?" And we'd make people throw the throw that they're not good at. And a lot of times it didn't work.
Well, that's
that
different than I'm
going
to make a free throw. Like, that's a little bit different.
No, because now you're not thinking about making the free throw. You are now thinking, like, I'm going to show this guy that I will deliver on Sunday.
Regardless, that's still more fun. Point. That's still more fun than everyone just dead silent the entire round.
Okay, that's fine. I'm not saying it's not.
Yeah,
my whole point, though,
more
is good
fun.
Trash talking doesn't make you want to smile and laugh.
I would,
that
my immediate reaction would be,
that's not good trash talking.
Even if, like, going on in my head is like, all right, let's do this.
Okay.
On the outside,
need to
be
get,
like, all right. That's the response.
Well, that's just
Hunter,
your reaction.
I said it would make me
we
smile
need to get
and laugh.
Hunter in, we need to get Hunter into a serious, like, 3-on-3 basketball game and have like a plant trash talker.
The bad part with that
really,
is,
really
like,
good.
I'm not good enough at basketball right now. Like, the key with trash talk is, like, you need to feel like you can do something to, like, get trash talk and get under your skin. Because, like, basketball, like, if you're like, shoot it, you suck, I'd be like, I know I suck. Like, you're 100% right now. I can't shoot it. I can't prove that. You need something that you feel like you can prove.
I know, but, like, trash talking is, like, also, like, personal. Like, they find out something about
oh,
you.
Yeah, now that's where it gets real electric. Like, when there was a crowd, college basketball, one of the crowds, the school got on them. They, like, would every game before the game deep dive in their, like, people's, like, Facebook histories and stuff and start chanting their, like, ex-girlfriend's name or, like, ask them, like, why'd you cheat on so-and-so? And they, like, be chanting it while they're at the free throw line.
Yeah, my guess is those people weren't smiling, being like, ha-ha,
well,
that's a good one.
That's beyond trash
probably
talk.
Pissed.
That's not.
No, that is good trash talk.
That's trash
talk. Good trash
but that's,
talk.
Like, that's a whole different level of trash talk.
It is a,
no,
it
but
is
that
a
is
level
what,
above.
Hunter,
but.
That is what trash talking is, though. Trash talking is, I think you have this idea.
No,
that
there's
trash
two different levels.
Like,
there's two different
hey,
levels.
Man,
there's
nice
the mailman, like, doesn't deliver on Sunday. Funny. Why'd you cheat
no,
on. Why'd you cheat
that's
on.
That's not funny, though, if you're
stylist.
The mailman, though.
No, that's still fun. Like, that's a funny one versus why'd you cheat on someone? Like, that's not even trash talk at that point. That wasn't even creative. That's just like, okay, now we're just trying to have a personal conversation. Like, I feel like trash talk comes after a point in your game where, like, someone can prove you wrong. If it's just like,
no,
your mom's
no,
dead, that's messed up. That's not trash talk.
There's no, yeah. The thing is, there's no limits to trash talking, though. There's literally no limit.
No,
anything,
but I think there's like two,
the
when someone says trash talk, you're not thinking of the ladder. You're thinking of the mailman doesn't deliver on Sunday or, like, throw
no,
the forehand here. You can't.
You're thinking of whatever you can. The whole reason trash talking exists is to try to get. To get your opponent or get the team that you're rooting against to get them out of their element, to get them to do something that they naturally or normally wouldn't do. That's the whole point of trash talk.
Yeah.
The point of trash talk. Now, obviously, like, friendly banter, I think, is what you're kind of going off of where if I'm doing a video with you guys, like, I'm not ever in my head being like, hey, I need to say something to really try to get Hunter to miss this putt.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, like, if you make the putt or you don't make the putt, it doesn't really matter that much. But, like, that's that's the whole thing with trash talk, is you're like trying to get into their head. So when you say something, like, you're just doing whatever you can to make them do something that they don't.
But I'm saying, when the question was posed originally, trash talk, like, we were, I think we were all in the same brainwave of like, throw the forehand here, you won't, no guts, you won't do it, mailman doesn't deliver on Sunday, like that type of, like, trying to get them to do something game wise, not showing up being like, oh, you're fat and ugly and you suck at life, you little piece of crap.
I was just
like, that's not trash talk at that point.
I was thinking of literally just having,
that's what I'm saying. Like,
I was literally just thinking of like three people being on my car that were just constantly trash talking me the entire time. Like, I personally probably would not enjoy that round as much as me just. Three people that
talk. It's not just one person too, it's three people.
I know, but if you're, I think a big part too is like, if you're saying a quiet card at a setting like a pro tour, like Brody was saying, yeah, that's probably almost preferred in a lot of ways. But a quiet card when you're 4 hours in the woods and you're only people you're gonna see are the people on your card, like, I mean, I've played on those cards. I haven't played on a card where three people are trash talking me nonstop. I'll give you that. I have not done that. But I played on a card where no one said anything the entire round, and it is the most awkward, just like tense round ever, to where like you feel like you ran a marathon after, because it's just like tension in the room the entire time. And like, you can't be the guy that's like, so like, what'd you guys eat for lunch, man? Like, no one wants to break it. There's no way to like bring anything up. It's just the most awkward round of all time.
I want you to play with someone that gives you one that, like, when they ask you what you shot, like, you know, after the hole, everyone's like, all right, what'd you get? I want you to play with someone that always adds one to your score. So like, if you double bogeyed a par four and got a six, they're like, okay, Hunter, what'd you get there? You got a seven? And you're like, no, I got a six. And they're like,
that's some mental warfare right there.
And they go, oh wow, man, good job. Literally, next hole, you bogey a par three. Hunter, was that a five? You're like four. You're like, oh, wow, that's way better than I thought you would have done. And then it's literally every single time, throw in a little jab at your score. Oh, man, that'd be a good one. All right, that's all I got on Twitter. Any first in the chat? Anyone? I thought those were some pretty good Twitter.
Those are. Those are some great
prompts. Yeah, those are well thought out for sure.
Nothing.
Did we
chat silent?
Did we catch it? Did we have anything else to talk about, Hunter?
Oh, I don't think so.
No, that was it.
I think we hit everything. Because I almost forgot the Corey Ellis one, but we brought that up.
Yeah, the Corey Ellis one is wild.
Yeah.
Nuts. I just don't think you've ever been trash talked. I don't think
I've never had a personal attack from trash talk. I've had things come after my game, what I'm wearing, stuff like that. But like, all that stuff's real easy. Just like, let it roll off. But I guess there hasn't been that much of when I played AAU, for instance, we were on like U13. So like, no one even had Facebook. Like, there's no way to find out who my, like, I didn't even have an ex-girlfriend, but there would have been no way to find out who she was if I did.
Have I ever told you about the left, right, left? Have I ever talked about that? Of how, like, at Ultimate Frisbee games, they would literally, every time I took a step with my left foot, say left, and every time I took a step with my right foot, say right. Have I told that story?
I feel like you have.
I don't know.
It sounds vaguely familiar, but just tell it while Silas is looking for some topics.
Well, essentially, that's all the story is. It's not really much of a story, but it's like, you just have the entire crowd, when you're running or doing whatever, there's like left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right. And eventually, like, you realize what they're doing and you're like, oh, wow, they're doing it every single time I take a step. And it does, at the beginning, make you think like, should I start walking over here? Because they're just going to start yelling left, right, left, right.
That's funny.
So it's something that can probably only happen when you're at like a much smaller venue.
Yeah.
Because I went to like a Texas Rangers game one time. There was no one in the crowd. And I literally could yell whatever I wanted to. And the person in left field heard exactly what I was yelling. Like, there was, and I wasn't even like right up against the dugout or right up against, I was pretty far up. I was probably like in the second section or something there. But like, there was no, it was dead quiet in there. So I could literally yell whatever I wanted to. and that guy knew exactly I was talking to him. So that's yeah. Silas, what do we got? We got anything?
Yeah. Someone says, are one-speed discs one of those old-school trends that is coming back in style? Hunter would know.
One-speed discs?
Yep.
Well, I think the heck is a one-speed
disc? It's like
a
lid. It's like a lid. Essentially, I mean, I guess yes, technically. Originally, the whole idea behind it, from what I understand, is like fastbacks and stuff like that. Like, it was what people were used to throwing. And so then you roll that into disc golf and you make something that's used to what people are used to, like, or people are used to. They're going to like that. And you just make it in like a disc golf plastic and like a little bit smaller. I think it's coming back to a certain extent a lot because like the meme culture around the Polecat and the Halo Polecat and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then also you had the like Hydrogen by Loft or Luft, however you say their name, where they were advertising like a slow putter, all of that, like the Berg. I don't know if the Berg technically a one
sponsored
speed
by them. They have a sponsored. They have a sponsored player on tour.
Luft or Loft?
I think they have a sponsored player on tour. I'm trying to think of who it is. It might be that Thomas guy.
I don't know.
Thomas Heigenstein.
I don't know. Fascinating.
Nice. All right.
I saw someone with like a big aloof thing on the back of their shirt. Like,
I just saw a comment that I think is a good point. Sorry, so I also do have the chat pulled up over here. Not to be cheating on you. Danny Hollis said, the fact that match play will have more filming than the Beaver State Fling is an atrocity.
Dude, I was getting there.
Right? I'm sorry. I just saw that come up and I was like, that's a great point. The Silver Series filming is fascinating to me, mainly because the Pro Tour just, we talked about it in Grip Locks, I won't go into it too much, but the Pro Tour just can't turn it around as fast as like the industry standard. So like I didn't watch round two, and I heard a lot of people didn't watch round two because the only way to watch it was post-produced. But by the time post-produced round two came out, the final round of FPO was live. And then basically right after that, the final round of MPO went live. And so like I wanted to watch the final round live. I watched the final round FPO live. There wasn't a lot of time for me to watch round two MPO. And round one MPO didn't even come out for me on the East Coast until like the morning of Sunday before round three was going to go live. So it was like very tight to squeeze that much disc golf in before the round went live. So a lot of people just didn't even watch it. It was wild.
Brody, Kirby Snyder I did. Is sponsored by Loft. Luft.
Kirby Snyder.
Oh, that's who it is.
They said he's from Washington and played Portland.
Okay, that's who it was then. Okay. Yeah, because I saw his name on the leaderboard. Okay, cool. Well, that's good to know. That's cool that they sponsor someone.
Yeah.
I wonder if he has to throw that driver. I need to ask him, like,
yeah,
how's
you
he gotta
ask that. I'm curious. I gave one of the ones they sent us to Stephen Curry, who I think he just graduated and moved back to Pennsylvania. But anyways, when he was here and he was like in love with the thing. He was like, I can throw this so much farther. Like he was in love with it.
For backhand and forehand?
I think he was throwing it both. Yeah. Like he was getting like some hyzer flips with it on his forehand because he has a pretty strong forehand. And he was saying that he was just throwing it farther than anything else. So I don't know. It's crazy.
I will ask, is there any better feeling than going back to a course that you haven't played in a while? And like obviously it doesn't matter if you aren't practicing, but this is like with the thought that you have been practicing and gotten better. Is there any better feeling than going to that course and playing it and being like, oh my God, these gaps are way bigger than I last remember. Or like a hole where you're like, I had to throw this as hard as I could to even get up there. And now I can just throw a hyzer to it. That might be the best feeling in disc golf.
It's gotta be up there. Yeah. My only real experience with that, because like I've gotten worse in disc golf over the past few years, I would say, as a collective whole. But like when I was first getting into disc golf, there was a few courses that I went to and then I would come back, and it wasn't necessarily the gap hitting for me, but like my distance, I would be like playing my practice round and I'd remember, oh, this was like my Thunderbird or T-Bird or whatever disc.
Yeah,
and I would self and throw it and that thing would like go way past the basket, or like I would think this hole isn't reachable. And then I'd like go past. I'd be like, oh, this is no longer my Thunderbird. I got to throw my mid here instead. And like, yeah, that's an incredible feeling. Cause you're just like, dang, like no wonder I got slapped around last time I was here. Everyone was throwing mids and putters when I was throwing distance drivers. So that was a big one for me. But that was like during that first year where like basically Silas played a tournament in March. Was it Silas that we played?
Yeah.
Like if that tournament, if you just like you never played Falling Creek and the next March we showed back up and you played the exact same tournament, it'd be like a wild experience because like playing it, playing it progressively, it like you don't notice the changes. But like that's what happened to me is like this course I didn't see for a little over a year. And then I showed back up for another tournament and I was like, what is this place? Like, this is way easier.
We
than
need
I thought.
Let's you guys need to all come down here at some point.
Yeah.
We'll have Silas play Dash's track.
Heck yeah.
And then he'll grind and get better and get better. And then we'll bring him back a year later and we'll do it before and after. And it'll be one of the, like, you playing Dash's track right now, Silas, you'll be like, this course is so difficult. This is like one of the hardest courses I've ever played.
I don't know if I'd say hardest
and
courses
then,
ever.
Not maybe our hardest.
You'd be able to birdie.
We did have New London.
Dash's track is like a harder piece.
Dash's track is hard though if you don't
hit
the gap.
It's hard to score. It's hard to score.
If you get off the fairway at Dash's track, like you bogey is not out of the question. But it is one of those where it's like as long as you hit the if you can hit the initial gap on every hole, like you're gonna shoot 15 under probably.
Yeah.
So but yeah, we need to do something like that. Cause that's always that is always the best feeling ever. Is like playing a course that you haven't played.
Well, speaking of like trips, we're going to Charleston next month, as we had mentioned on the, I think it was the
banter. I need to book my flights.
You do.
I need to book my flights.
But Silas today brought up, he's like, am I going to Charleston? And I was like, well, it wasn't really like planned. Like we're just doing some bogey row battles and Foundation First Nation. I was like, would you want to go? He's like, yeah. So his task now, because we leave tomorrow, me, Trevor, and Connor, we leave tomorrow to go to Tennessee, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, that whole thing. So we're going the rest of this week.
Yeah.
We're back on Monday, and on Monday we always have a media meeting. And during the media meeting, I've given Silas the task of creating a PowerPoint to try to convince me why it's necessary for him to be in Charleston. And if he can do so with his PowerPoint, we're going to allow
him
to come.
Wait, this is on Monday?
On Monday, Monday morning, he will be doing a PowerPoint presentation. I think we'll probably film it for the Patreon. I think we'll film it for the Patreon for sure. Yeah, and it'll be a group business decision of, is it good enough? Is there enough reason for Silas to come to Charleston with us?
It's going to be professionally done.
It's fully in your hands, Silas. If you can, I am on the fence right now. This PowerPoint could push me right into your hands of letting you come.
What?
This PowerPoint's
going to blow your mind. What time are you guys doing it roughly?
We normally do it at 7, but we can change it up.
No, do it at 7 because I'll be up because I have a flight in the morning, so that works out perfectly for me.
All right, 7 Eastern. We'll Skype Brody in. It's gonna be great. I can't wait.
Fascinating.
And if you want to watch it, I think we're gonna try. We'll try to film it for Patreon. I'll post about it once it happens. If we get to post it on Patreon, so if you want to watch it, you're not gonna want to miss out. And Silas, hopefully you're coming to Charleston with us, man.
Yeah, we'll find out. I'm gonna bring the heat on this presentation. It's I took speech class in college freshman year.
Oh heck yeah!
So I'm geared up. I'm ready to go.
I've never been more excited.
So I'll give you a helpful. I'll give you one helpful tip. Okay,
Let's hear it.
Bring a handful of Charleston chews for everyone to start off. Like, give everyone a nice Charleston chew, just kind of get their sugar levels up.
All right,
and that will get everyone in a good mood to start the PowerPoint.
Okay.
Someone asked
one of the best things from Charleston.
Someone asked, why are we coming to Charleston? You'll just have to wait next week. Next week you'll know. We'll just leave it at that. Next week you'll know. Next week you'll know why we're coming to Charleston. Yeah. So we'll just leave it there. And you know what? I think that's a good note to end the show on. I think next week you'll know. We'll end it there. And I think we wrap it up. Any final call outs or anything, Brody?
Yeah. You know. I mean, I think some people are trying to cancel me on Twitter. So I had that whole deal happen.
Yeah.
Of where it's just like I wouldn't talk about certain things on my own Twitter account, which I find absolutely fascinating.
That's Twitter, man.
I'll say this because I did say it on the Twitter live, but I thought it was so interesting because when I first came into disc golf, I had people basically saying, like, telling me to stop talking and like earn it, or like you haven't been around long enough or you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But yet I have people on Twitter asking me to talk about stuff that I have no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And because I'm saying like, hey, I don't know what I'm talking about, so I don't think it really makes sense for me to like say my opinion on things because I just don't even know if that's like right or not. It's kind of wild that people are still like, well, no, you should state your opinions on stuff that you know nothing about. But we can save that for another one.
There you have it.
Maybe again, we are always down for having special guests come on and debate us about anything and everything. And we'll see if that day ever does come. It has yet to come.
All right. There you have it. Talk to you next week.